in the mountains this summer, they started doing some trenching by my house. And after they did the trenching, it was all dirt, and they put hay instead of sod, because I guess the sod would roll off the hill. And they put hay everywhere, and I'm wondering, what's with the hay? And so the hay's there, and some of you already know, but I didn't know this, I'm a city boy. And all of a sudden, as it rains, grass starts coming out of the hay. Leave me alone. Grass starts coming out of the hay, and I talked to the property manager. I said, that's amazing. How did that happen? He said, well, they seed the hay. God's salt shaker. You are God's salt shaker. And figuring out what that means, and especially in a culture like this, in a time like this. Now, we've already done, and this comes immediately after the 8 stair steps. And each stair step gets a little more intense. The 8 stair steps are the 8 Beatitudes. You know, you're blessed when you're poor in spirit, when you know you're poor in spirit, when you know you're spiritually needy, not just when you come to Christ, forever spiritually needy. Forever. I need to daily find my time to plug this in, my heart in, and spend time with God and recharge and get a new thing. And then number 2, Beatitude was when you mourn your sin, mourn what it cost Jesus to come get me. And then number 3, what do you hunger and thirst after? I need to hunger and thirst after righteousness, after right living. And sometimes in our culture, because we see a friend buy a new whatever or get a new whatever, and we hunger and thirst after that, I want that, I want to have that, rather than hunger and thirst after right living. And then on top of that, especially in this time, when you show mercy. Davytown Council, 16, 17, 18 years ago, we were trying to get the zoning for here. We're at the Davytown Council. I'll never forget, I'm at the podium talking to the town council, and there's, Harvey, that room seats maybe 100. Yeah, and I
Full standing room only.
Yes. Yeah, they were down the walls. And some lady screams, if we give you the zoning, what's in it for us? I will never forget that. And I'm standing there trying to think of the answer, and a couple of the town council men are friends, and they're looking at me, do you have an answer, Tom Truex? And this little girl, about 30 years old, comes walking up to the podium, shaking and crying, and says, facing them, not facing that lady, don't you realize what this is all about? This is about children. This is about rescuing children. And you watched the room get real quiet. They realize, wow, no, it's showing mercy. It's about showing mercy. And then the 6th Beatitude, blessed are those whose hearts are pure. Do I pursue purity of heart? And purity of heart often starts with what goes in my eyes, what I look at, walk by, what I look at and think about. Yeah. We are called to be, the next one is peacemakers. We're called to be not peacekeepers, and this is the hard part, peacemakers, but how we make peace is so important. Not win, but peace, the bigger issue. And you are blessed, and this one's a hard one, the last one's a hard one. You are blessed when you have the privilege of being persecuted for Christ's sake. Oh, never remember asking Jesus, persecute me for your sake. Have me be persecuted. But when you're persecuted and you take it for Christ, if you've never read the book Bonhoeffer, you've missed one of the greatest books ever, ever, ever written. And Bonhoeffer's final days in the Nazi concentration camp, and he didn't have to go back to Germany. He was in England. And Bonhoeffer was a Christian professor. He went back to his country and just to lead a revival. And as he did that, he ends up in a concentration camp. And everybody, including some pastors, are freaking out because if the Allies don't get there in time, we're going to be killed. And Bonhoeffer makes a statement. Wouldn't it be great just to get to go to heaven? And everybody's looking at him. Yeah, it's about your battles. Are they for Christ's sake? Are they for Christ's sake? Yeah, as we climb these stairs, the Beatitudes, and adopt these Christ-like attitudes, so the Beatitudes are attitudes to be attitudes. We then need to bring them to the world. The Beatitudes are in our mind and heart. Now, how does that look out there? How do I go out there and do this? And so Jesus, the first thing he takes on after the Beatitudes is, you are the salt of the earth. But if salt has lost its taste, how shall its saltiness be restored? It is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled under feet. That's the ESV translation, the NLT translation. You are the salt of the earth. But what good is salt if it's lost its flavor? It will be thrown out and trampled underfoot as worthless. Now, to them, salt was huge. Huge. So they would get it more than we would get it. Salt is major, but we need to look at what salt was to them and what salt is to us. So Jesus, we are the salt of the world with a Christ-like life. With a Christ-like life. So what does this Christ-like life look like? How does it look in this community? And can I say, North Carolina, everybody kind of has like Christian niceness, whether they're Christians or not. It's kind of funny to me. When I first went to church in Knoxville to get a date with Rosemary, because she wouldn't go out with me, which was shocking. Who wouldn't want some of this, but she wouldn't go out with me. And my fraternity brother said, she's in our church. And so it was a big church in the Knoxville area. I went to church to be with her, and I saw my fraternity brothers there. And I knew what they did last night and Friday night. And it was shocking to me. And I commented to one, why are these guys in church? Well, they've always been in church. And he's the one that gave me the phrase, in East Tennessee, everybody goes to church, including the livestock. It's just part of the culture here to go to church. And I thought, how deceptive that is. Yeah. Jesus is calling us to be salt to our community. Now, what does that mean? Well, letter A, salt was very valuable. They also used salt as a way of paying the Roman legionaries. They would give them denarii, but they also, the Roman legionaries would be in places where no one wanted Roman gold. It was not translatable, and so they gave them salt because you can sell salt. So it was very valuable. To us today, it's hard to get this metaphor for us. But also, salt was a symbol of friendship. Giving somebody salt is a declaration, that's my friend. But it ramps up here. There's another one, letter C. Salt was used to bind a covenant. It says in Leviticus 2:13, you shall season all your grain offerings with salt. You shall not let the salt of the covenant with your God be missing from your grain offering. With all your grain offerings, you shall offer salt. So obviously very important. One verse repeats it three times. Yeah. Number one, it's expensive. It's costly. Number two, it's a symbol that says something. But there's another thing that salt is. Letter D, salt is a preservative. You wrap things in salt. They wrap things in salt. They didn't have refrigerators for preserving. It's time for us to be preserving the Christian culture in America. It's time for us to take stands. It's time for us to be what we need to be around our neighbors. And it's interesting. So I park my car, and there's a lady from down the street walking her dog. And this has been 3 or 4 months. And she came up to me, and she's talking to me about stuff. And she says, what does your license plate mean? And I told her, where I work. She says, oh, yeah, I heard that you work at that children's home on Flamingo. I said, yeah, and I told her a little more about it. And then she asked, how did you get a piece of property like that? And I said, oh, it was all Jesus. Mm-hmm. And I'm watching her glaze over. And I'm talking, I said, but that's my story too. I mean, I'm a guy who graduated from high school at 19. And my graduating class, I was 588 out of a class of 1,200. And she's just looking at me. She said, and I've heard you've written books. Yeah, I said, that's a miracle. That's an absolute miracle. It's all Jesus. But watching her cloud over and find a way to walk away, my job is not to make the sale. My job is just to be the salt. is to be the salt. And in my own world, as Rosemary was sharing the gospel to me over and over and over, wouldn't go out with me, but we'd get a cup of coffee on a bench on the campus, and she'd share the gospel and share the gospel and share the gospel. And basically, I only listened to her because she was gorgeous. And then on our university campus, you have to be my age to remember this name, Madeline Murray O'Hara came to speak, founder of the Atheist Party in America, the one who got Bibles out of schools in the Supreme Court case. And I'm standing there listening to her, sitting in the auditorium on our campus, listening to her, realizing, wow, I have finally met somebody as angry as me. And then I look over to the right, and Rosemary's pastor standing on the wall, out of seats, and he's leaning up against the wall. Big ripped man, his name was Spurgeon McCart. What a great name for a pastor, named after Charles Spurgeon. And he's got tears running down his face. So I get back to the dorm and take out my yellow legal pad and write him a letter about everybody didn't believe that. Everybody didn't believe that. And in the letter I said, in fact, it's pushing me the other way. It's pushing me to God, her speech. And I mailed it that day, and I get to church that Sunday, pretty much for the wrong reasons again, still trying to get a date with Rosemary. He ends the service and pulls out this yellow legal pad page because the Knoxville area was furious that Madeline Murray O'Hara was asked in and wanted the people to hear. Everybody didn't believe that talk. And he read my letter, and I'm gasping. And then he gave an altar call, and I can't believe I got up and didn't know what I was doing. I walked down there. Believe it or not, I remember telling this to Jim Kennedy, Dr. Kennedy, and he said, can you believe that Jesus used Madeline Murray O'Hara as salt for that moment in your life? That he's capable of absolutely anything. We're called to be salt. We're called to be salt. It's also a preservative. But salt does something else. I grew up initially in New York and then outside of New York in Nassau County on Long Island. And every summer for 6 weeks, I would go away to summer camp, Pinecrest Dunes. And summer camp was in the middle of nowhere, which is not in the middle of nowhere anymore. A couple hundred acre camp. And apparently there was a lot of poison ivy there. So we were required, it was on a lake and salt water, the ocean. And we were required 3 times a week as campers to go swimming in the ocean because apparently salt and salt water kills poison ivy. Yeah, interesting. Salt is a cleanser. It cleans. Yeah. There's another interesting word about thing about salt. You never say to anybody, please pass the salts. A shaker full of salts. You never say that. Salt is a plural word because we are called to work together. We're not called to be individual grains. We're called to be working together to change this world for Christ's sake. Yeah, we're called to bring spice to our surroundings. Yeah, spice to our, not only a preservative, but is the world around you a better place, more enjoyable? Do people want to be there because of you? But another thing, we are called to make people around us thirst. So, and I've told this story before, but I've told all my stories 100 times. The 50th anniversary of my high school football team, and they had a big high school football team reunion for the class of 1966, and I didn't go. It's back in Washington, D.C., and Rosemary said, you're going? I said, no, I'm not really proud of my high school years. I didn't go. And they got there, and they were asking where I was, and somebody's looking me at where I lived, and somebody's looking me up, and they looked me up, and they said, are you kidding me? He's written books. I mean, he almost didn't get out of high school, and he's written books. And they went down the list, which was funny that my name would come up from a high school football team. I maybe played in 3 plays my senior year, but it came up. So I get a call about a week later from a guy named Barry. Barry inherited his dad's business, which has a couple of dozen car dealerships around the Beltway into Virginia and into Maryland. He's a billionaire. I knew that. He was my best friend in high school. And he said, can I come to town? I said, what do you mean? I just want to come to town. I've been doing some stuff, and I've been listening, and I just want to come to town. And I said, sure, tell me when you want to come. He said, well, how far are you from Executive Airport? And I said, you have your own plane, don't you? And he said, yeah, I have a jet. I'm coming to town. So he came to town to spend the day, and we're sitting at Chili's forever and ever and ever. And I kept saying, Barry, I don't want to make this overly complicated. I didn't do these things. It's Jesus. I didn't do these things. Well, what about the books? I said, it's all Jesus. I was speaking at a convention in Jacksonville on single parenting in America today, and I didn't realize the editor-in-chief of Tyndall House Publishers had decided to show up. And he meets me afterwards, and he says, you need to put this in a book. And I said, and he became a mentor for me. I said, Dr. Hawley, I didn't know even how to write term papers, let alone books. And he says, just write a chapter and send it to me in Chicago at Tyndall House. I wrote a chapter, he called, wrote a chapter, he called, another chapter, and then he said, it's time to send you a contract. And I said, I don't even know what that means. And he sends a contract. And Jesus really tested me in this particular situation. The book came out in the early 80s. This was my first book. It came out, and it came out mid-October, and I would go speak, and I'd set it out on the table sell the book and tell them to write the check to Bob Barnes. And I get a call the end of December from Dr. Hawley at Tyndall House, and he said, you know how we give you the author's discount of 50%, so your $10 paperback is really only $5. If you let Sheridan House sell it, we'll give you 90% off. And I said, I don't know how to ask this, but why would I do that? And he said, because it's the right thing to do. He said, I'm sure you're writing the book on Sheridan House time. It's the right thing to do. And yeah, he was great. And my dad was still ringing in my head, Bobby, money makes the world go round. And it was during an era where Sheridan House didn't have much. And so I said, all right, $500, I'll give it a shot. And honestly, it was a little bit controversial book. I got canceled by two churches because the book was on single parenting and they said I was endorsing divorce, and it was just bizarre. But in February, so I let Sheridan House have the money. In February, Dobson picked it up, and I was out there and did a week worth of interviews, and then Swindoll picked it up, and then Smalley and Trent picked it up, and I had to go into seven printings that year, and Sheridan House made over $100,000. But here's the funny part. So end of December, Dr. Hawley calls from Chicago and says, so you're going to do the same thing, let Sheridan House have the money next year. I said, and I think I was making $33,000 a year. I said, I don't know, can I just think about it? And he said, don't make me fly down there. It was really like a dad, and he would show up every now and then here. And I said, let me go home and talk to Rosemary. And Rosemary looked at me and said, how many zeros on a check would you give this up for? I thought, wow. Now it's a massive amount of money. I don't know total now, but wow. Yeah, we're called to make people around us thirst. Thirst, thirst, very thirsted. But here's an important one. We're called to get out of the shaker. I don't know whether the shaker is my heart or represents the church, but we're called to get out of here and salt the culture around us, the places where you work, the things you do. Because if you don't do that, if you don't salt the shaker, what happens is it hardens. And when it hardens, wow. You know at home when it hardens because of the humidity and you've got to smack it on the table to get the salt out? I mean, that's one of our points we'll get to, but does he have to smack you on the table right now? Yeah. The other thing salt does is it's pure white. It's pure white. Dissolves and gets out of the way. It's pure white. Yeah. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn because they're mourning their sin. Blessed are those who are meek or humble. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for what? A word you could put in there is lust. Yeah, and merciful. And doesn't just say merciful when people have the same opinion as you. Different opinion. Merciful. Blessed are the pure in heart. The pursuit of that, of pursuing purity. Blessed are the peacemakers. Yeah, in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, I beg you that when I come, this is Paul, I may not have to be as bold as I expect to be towards some people who think we live by the standards of this world. For though we live in the world, we do not wage war as the world does. We need to be different, not weird. Different and gracious and kind and kind. It was so funny. Rosemary asked me to go with her to Publix. I went with her to Publix, and she's got a bunch of stuff, and I haven't been in Publix in forever. And there's a lady behind us with two items, and she's got a full cart. And she says to the lady behind us, you go ahead. You go ahead. I have all this. You just have two. And the lady just looks at her. She says, no, really, you go ahead. And I had to look at the lady and said, I think she means that you better go before she gets mean. And the lady burst out laughing, and she went ahead. She waited for us outside Publix for something as little and ridiculous as that, just to say thank you. Wow, We live in a mean world. We need to not be like this mean world. Yeah, for though I live in the world, it says in the third verse there, we do not wage war as the world wages war. No, we need to confront, but we need to confront kindly. We don't want to offer the world anything that doesn't point to Christ. We must be very careful not to become a salt substitute. And can I say, this is so important for the Church of Jesus Christ. And Armando and I were talking about this earlier. Because if people aren't careful, they'll make their pastor a salt substitute. And when a pastor crashes or whatever, and the people stop going to church because they've been looking at the wrong place. Pastor's just a teacher. He's just a servant. That's all. Period. We can't look to people as, no, it's all Jesus. And just pointing to Jesus. Yeah, no salt substitute. You are the salt of the earth. Yeah, salt has to get out of the shaker to do its job. I need to be salting my community. So there are people in your community, on your street, you probably wouldn't hang with. Those are the people you need to hang with. There was a couple across the street, they've moved now, from my house. And the minute I moved in there, there's a lady that said I was a pastor. And so it would be interesting watching people try not to make eye contact when I'm rolling the garbage cans out because I'm going to do something pastory or whatever they thought I was going to do. And I saw them one day and went over and talked to them for a little bit. And they were kind of ready to be done with the conversation. And then they had a marriage problem. I have a knock on my door. Can we talk to you? Our job is to be as available as we can be and let people know we are available. I need to be salting my community. Yeah, and we've already done this. When salt hasn't been used in a long time, it hardens. The salt shaker has to be jolted. Is God jolting you right now to get your attention? To get your attention. Bob, I got stuff for you, son. I got stuff for you to be doing. I got stuff for you to be doing differently. Let me shake this right now. So, it's time to take the salt test. Letter A. Do I take a stand for Christian values and do it in a humble manner? Do I take a stand for Christian values and do it in a humble manner rather than a confrontational manner, rather than an in-your-face manner? Do I take a stand? You're required, if your child's here, you're required to come to parent meetings. Otherwise, I think it's $2,800 a month to have your child here unless you come to parent meetings. I asked Brian yesterday, what's the cheapest amount? We got some paying $60. We want you at parent meetings. We use the child to get to the family. We don't want to send him back to the same parents. The challenge in America today is not the children. The challenge in America today is this, the fourth generation since World War II that wasn't parented. They were activated to death. Wasn't parented, don't make their beds. Aren't held accountable, no consequences, talking back, throwing temper tantrums, which makes them unemployable. And they have to go through a nightmare in their mid-20s, losing a couple jobs because they don't know how to show up on time. So the job today in the education world and in our world, train the parent, use the child to train the parent. We got your child, unless you want to pay $2,800 a month. And it's interesting because years ago we had two circuit court judges' kids. I used to work for the circuit court. I was the placement social worker. And they referred their children here, and I said, Judge, you know, you got to be at the Thursday. I don't want to come to those meetings. Do you want to pay $2,800 a month? And the wife, I'm looking at both of the judges' wives, and they're like looking at me in a way like, please get him to come. Please get him to come. He's never home. And watching those two little boys launch, because they would go home, and they would go home to a different family, and teach them how hold them accountable. He's there. He's home every Saturday, every Sunday, and he's home on Saturdays to serve mom. Period. Mom shouldn't be washing a dish on Saturday, or Sunday. Done. Serving mom, so he's prepared to serve his wife when he gets married. Want him to be marriageable and employable. Yeah, yeah. Do I take a stand for Christian values and do it in a humble manner? Do I encourage the people around me to make godly decisions? So years ago, I was eating in a restaurant, with a guy, and I see across the restaurant a friend, a guy, who is eating with a woman. I know this guy well, and the woman's not his wife. And so later on in the week, I give him a call, and I said, I'm back up in Fort Lauderdale today, you've got 10 minutes. And I go by in 10 minutes, I go by, and he lets me come in his office. He's an attorney in Fort Lauderdale, and I'm there. And I said, who was that you were eating with? Well, it's one of our administrative assistants. Yeah, I said, I know it's not your wife. Do you think that's a good thing? Oh, Bob. I said, I don't think it's a good thing. I said, the number of men in the over 40 years have ended up in my office saying, you know, with tears, weeping, I don't know how it happened. I mean, we were working together, and then every now and then we'd meet in the coffee room together and sit and talk for a while, and then all of a sudden we have lunches together, just the two of us, and then all of a sudden, after a period of a year, we didn't come back from lunch, we went to a hotel. Because Satan is very, very patient, especially to take down a Christian, and this man was a Christian. And I told him the story. I said, pre-children, when we lived in Hollywood, Rosemary's best friend lived with us for a while. Rosemary's best friend was a blonde flight attendant and a model. And she was there for two Christmases. The first Christmas she was there because, and I'm German, my Christmas presents to Rosemary were stupid. A vacuum cleaner and all, it was pathetic. I didn't know any better, but it was pathetic. And so she said in December, the first week in December of the next year to Rosemary, can I just take him shopping? And Rosemary's laughing, said, yeah, go ahead. So we go to the just open Broward Mall on University, and we buy all these fun things for Rosemary, clothes and stuff I don't know how to do. And then we went to Houlihan's restaurant together, and we're sitting there eating, and I watch a guy named Ed walk in, who I had led to Christ 6 months ago. He walks in, and he looks over, and he sees Barnes sitting with a blonde, and he turns around and walks out into the parking lot. And I get up immediately and go into the parking lot. What was that all about? Well, that's not Rosemary. What were you doing? Nothing. That's Rosemary's best friend. Okay. Turned around, got in his car, and left. Even appearance of evil. Satan will use appearance of evil. We have to be extremely careful. But we have to be willing to go to people that puts God puts in our path. Yeah. Do I bring fun to my surroundings? Do I bring fun to my surroundings? Are people glad when I'm there and sad when I'm not?
Well, that's important.
Especially now.
Yep.
Especially now. Yes. Does my saltiness encourage people to want to know more about Christ? Can I ask you a question? Did you always believe that? Can I just ask you a question? Yeah, there's a great story in the Bible. It's in John 4, begins in John 4:4. And it says, and he had to pass through Samaria, he meaning Jesus. So he came to the town of Samaria called Sychar, near the field of Jacob, and given to his son Joseph. Jacob's well was there, so Jesus, wearied as he was from his journey, was sitting beside the well. It was about the sixth hour, which means noon. A woman from Samaria came to draw water, and Jesus said to her, give me a drink. Now let me tell you, you don't go draw water at noon. You draw water in the early morning, and sometimes again in the evening you draw water, and all the women would go and they'd have a little fellowship, almost like having a coffee time together as they're drawing water, talking to each other. This woman's going at noon because she's got a problem and doesn't want to be made fun of by any women in this village. And Jesus said to her, she came to draw water, and Jesus said to her, give me a drink. For his disciples had gone away into the city to buy food. Anybody have a thought on why he sent all his disciples to go buy food rather than four, go get a Caesar sandwich and come back? I don't know, but I think being Jesus, he knew this encounter was coming and he knew his disciples might be a problem. She's a Samaritan woman. Number one, a woman. Number two, a Samaritan. You can't. Yeah. Yeah, the Samaritan woman said to him, how is it that you, a Jew, ask me for a drink, ask a drink from me, a Samaritan woman? For Jews have no dealings with Samaritans. Jesus answered her, if you knew the gift of God and who it is saying to you, give me a drink, you would have asked him and he would have given you living water. And the woman said, sir, you have nothing to draw water with and the well is deep. Where do you get that living water? Are you greater than our father Jacob? He gave us the well and drank from it himself, as did his sons and his livestock. And Jesus said to her, everyone who drinks this water will be thirsty again. You know, it goes back to hunger and thirst. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst after right living. And here's the word thirsty again. What do I almost lust after? What do I really want to have? Yeah, we'll be thirsty again. I got it, and it's, what's next? But whoever drinks of the well that I will give him will never be thirsty again. That water, the water that I will give him, will become to him a spring of water welling up to eternal life. The woman said, sir, give me this water so that I will not be thirsty or have to come here to draw water. And so Jesus, it's so awesome, Jesus puts the issue on the table here. Verse 16, Jesus said to her, go call your husband and come here. And the woman, I'm sure she's looking down on the ground. I have no husband. Jesus said to her, you're right saying you have no husband, for you have had five husbands, and the one you now have is not your husband. In other words, the one you're living with is not your husband. What you have said is true. And the woman said, sir, I perceive that you are a prophet. Our father worshipped on this mountain, but you say that in Jerusalem is the place where people ought to worship. And Jesus said to her, woman, believe me, the hour is coming when neither on this mountain nor Jerusalem will you worship the Father. You worship what you do not know. You worship what we know. The salvation is from Jews. But the hour is coming and is now here when the true worshipers will worship the Father in spirit and truth. For the Father is seeking such people to worship him. God in spirit, and those who worship him must worship in spirit and in truth. And the woman said to him, I know that Messiah is coming. He was called the Christ. When he comes, he will tell us all. Oh, Jesus said to her, I who speak to you am he. Just then the disciples came back and they marveled that he was talking to a woman. But no one said, what do you seek? Why are you talking to her? So the woman left her water jar and went into town and said to people, come and see the man who told me everything I ever did. Can he be the Christ? And they came up. Salt. So some fun salt the past 3 weeks. Rosemary encountered a woman from Haiti at church when we were at First Baptist Fort Lauderdale. And we didn't know for those 3 years until she and Rosemary talked on the phone, and they talk a lot. She's had a very, 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 very rough life. And in this rough life, she lost her car. She had to choose between an apartment and a car. And she has a job, let her car go. So she takes a bus to work. She would take a bus from Oakland Park on 31st, which is not that far to First Baptist Fort Lauderdale, 31st down to Broward and in, take her an hour and a half to get to church, hour and a half to get back, took a bus for groceries, took a bus to work. 20 years of this. We were given a car. Somebody bought this for us, a car that's a two-door that really isn't appropriate for a single mom. It's too hard to put your kids in the back, two-door Toyota. It was a mess. And in the process, Rick got it all fixed, and it took a long time to get it fixed. And then Hugo, who's in here, sits in the back. I wish he was here today. It was the dirtiest car ever seen. Been sitting for a long time. He got it perfectly clean, refused to take money. Tell your dad that, Preston. Hugo, this is my ministry. I refuse to take money. And gave her the car, and we're watching her change. Rosemary was on the phone with her for a long time last night. And all of a sudden, because, bless her little heart, and this was so amazing, she couldn't figure out how to turn the air conditioning on and drove down Tuesday evening. Rick said, I can't leave. Come down here. I'm here at the ladies' Bible study, helping to be the guard at the ladies' Bible study. Come down. She came down, and it was a matter of pushing a button to start the air conditioner and done. But that's not why God had her come down here. She walked into the ladies' Bible study and looked around and said, can I come to this? Came in and called Rosemary last night. I'm going to be there from now on. God uses difficult circumstances to be salt in your life. To be salt in your life. Bless her heart, not driving in South Florida for 20 years, to start driving in January when the whole world is here, and she takes all these back roads, won't go on any of the big highways, and I'm sure it takes her forever to get here, but she has a car, and every time she talks to Rosemary, she cries about it. I have a car. And she keeps trying to thank us, and we keep saying, we had nothing to do with this car. It's your Father. It's your Father. Yeah. You are God's salt shaker. Shake the Beatitudes out of your shaker. Spend yourself for Christ. Yeah, it needs to cost you. It needs to cost you. Spend yourself for Christ. And watch what He does. You are the salt of the earth. So today, as you, all these different salt shakers are walking around, where do I spend me today, Lord? Where do I shake me? How do I serve? How do I give? How do I, and I probably won't, I'm here till heaven. Oh, yeah, what you said to me that day, I know I didn't say anything back, but wow, I thought about it all day, and I went to church and came to Christ. We're called to make a difference, because I'm saying, if we don't make a difference, why would He leave us here? Okay, you're not making a difference. I'm bringing you home. Make a difference for Christ's sake. My Aunt Jean was right. My Aunt Jean, when my mom died, my Aunt Jean moved in. She was right. And she had this phrase, very, very crass. And she would catch me doing something at 16. She'd say, Bobby, for Christ's sake, what are you doing now? She didn't know she was right. For His glory.